Up to page 220. We began yesterday. We just began some of the psukim. We did aha layoim kikarav yoim lashem. We did a few psukim. We are in the middle of some of the mafarshim here. We went through the radak. We left off yesterday with the radak. So we're up to the malbim. Let's review yesterday. Let's just run through the psukim very quickly. Let's start. Just read the psukim from pasuk yud gimel. Let's go back to pasuk yud gimel, page 218. Page 218, Perek Al, Pasuk Yud Gimel, just review the Psukim Chigru, gird yourself in sackcloth, v'siftu, and eulogize. Who? HaKoyhanim. Because the Koyhanim have lost their avoida in the Beis HaMikdash. There's nothing for them more to do. There's no food. There's no meat. There's no animals. There's no menachos. There's no nesachim. There's no bikurim. There's no truma. We mentioned yesterday all the different things that the Koyhanim, all the matanis of the Koyhanim, at this period of time when there was a terrible famine, due to the locusts and the atziras geshamim, they are in a state of mourning. Halilu mesharsim mizbeach. What? The levim were not in mourning. So sometimes, why do we mention the levim? It's a good question. The levim also have no chilek in the land. They all survive based upon the ma'aser sheni. Maiser Rishoin. So why do we mention here in the pasuk the Levim? What? Everyone's out of work. Okay, you're right. I don't know the answer. Why don't we focus? Why do we only giving the thrust to the Kohanim? Why don't we also mention? Why don't we mention? Maybe that's what it means. Mishar Se'elokai. Maybe when it says here in the pasuk Mishar Se'elokai, it refers to the Levim. None of them farshim say that. That's certainly the Kohanim as well. That's repetition. What's the Mishar Se Elokai? That can refer to the Levim, because they're also the servants of Hashem. It does not say the word Kohanim, but it says the Mishar Se Elokai, and the Levim certainly are in the Gedder Mishar Se Elokai. But then it goes on to say, but that refers to the Kohanim. I hear your question. I don't have an answer. I do not have a good answer. We have to think about it. What happened over here to the Levim? Pasuk Yidal was kachut soim, designate a day of fasting. Kiru atzara, call for a gathering together. We learned yesterday, the Radak says it means to withhold from melacha. People should not do melacha. We're going to see over here in the Likutei Shas in a few moments. Is that a halacha that on a day of a tainis, you're not allowed to go to work. We learned that, we derived that from the word atzara. On a yom tzoim, there is a prohibition to go to work. Now today, obviously, that's not so. We never heard of a person not going to work on the dalet taniyos. That's because today we only observe the fast days as a minhag. We do not observe the fast days as a halacha. If we would observe the fast days as a halacha, things would be very different. Number one, we would fast at night, like on Tisha B'Av, and we would be chayiv to observe all of the five inuyim. We would not allow to bathe, me'ikar hadin. We would not allow to wear leather shoes. We would not allow to anoint our body with oil, v'chulu, v'chulu. We have all the different halachas. So b'zman hazeh, we do not observe the fast days as according to the letter of the law. We observe the four fast days more of a minhag. And that's why there is no prohibition for us to go to work on the Dalid Taniyos. But Nikar Hadin, if it was a real fast day, according to the letter of the law, halacha, then there would be you have to hold yourself back from going to work. You're not allowed to work. And the truth is, Tisha B'Av is more chomer. Tisha B'Av, to a certain degree, we observe almost as if it was the real deal. And indeed, Chazal said that a person who works on Tisha B'Av, Einoy roye simin baracha. And the question is, what does that mean? Does that, so some say only means until chatzos. Does not mean also a person is going to lose his job. So forget about roye simin baracha, but going to work at least holds back that you should not have klala. A person needs to go to work because he's going to lose his job. So you can't, okay, so in the chanami, maybe he will not expect to see from his wages that he earns from the morning until 12 o'clock, baracha. But he's not mechuyev but at least he needs to hold on to that to not put his job in jeopardy. That's a whole different league. That's not included in Chazal's statement of Eino Roya Simin Bracha. But you do get a sense that on Tisha B'Av it's not a time to engage in in business, in pursuit of parnasa. It's a time when a person should reflect upon the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Isfu zikenim, the elders should gather together the people in order to do tshuva kol yoshvei haaretz beis Hashem Elokeichem. We learned yesterday that everyone should gather to the Beis HaMikdash, the place where everyone should come, where there's going to be a program. There will be a Tisha B'Av program, a program in the Beis HaMikdash, the Zaku, and cry out El Hashem. Aha, woe, an expression of lament, layoim. Layom concerning the day that, according to the Radak, the day that is coming, according to the Radak, the famine did not yet start. Yoel is predicting that it will begin at some point in time. Ki karoiv yoim Hashem, the day is coming. Ucheshoid mishaka yavo, it's going to be a plundering. It's going to be a mighty beating upon the land like a plunderer that will come forth from Shakai. And the last thing we learned yesterday was that the word Shakai, being that it's juxtaposed to the word Shoid, means it refers to the Ribbono Shel Olam when he comes upon us with strength. With strength, just like the word Shoid means a plunderer, it has a connotation that we are helpless. We cannot escape the power of this individual who comes upon us with intensity. Likewise, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes upon Klal Yisrael with an intensity of strength, he is referred to by the name Shakai. When he comes upon us to judge us, he is known with the name of Elohim. When Hashem comes upon us with the name Yudke Vavke, he is coming upon us with the Midah of Rachamim. It's very nice. The Radak taught us this new idea that Shakai is derived from Shoid. It refers to strength, in his opinion. Haloi. Now we didn't do. We did not yet do pasuk tezayin. So let's leave that out. We did not yet get that far. Let's just take a look before we go further. Let's just take a look at the Malbum. The Malbum we did not yet do. Let's take a look going back to pasuk Yud Gimel on page 219. We'll run to the Malbum very quickly on page 219. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Chigru mitzave el hakoyhanim sheyachgiru sak. Litfilah. The Kohanim should dress themselves in sackcloth. Sackcloth is obviously very uncomfortable. And v'sheyispidu, they should feel pain. V'sheyispidu, they should eulogize al hatzar v'zayber derech klal ha-Kohanim. And this was said specifically or generally to the Kohanim. The Atam Afarish Shehu Medaber El Shtei Kidas Min ha-Kohanim. Two different groups of Kohanim. Shekat achas yachiru sak v'yispalilu. The kat acheres yelilu the yispidu kimisyoesh, as a person who has given up hope be'ein tikva, without any hope. Ki hayu kat hakoyhanim tzadikim shahayu mesharsi Hashem the oivdu avodas Hashem bekavonosam. They were koyhanim that served Hashem l'shem shemayim. Hayu kat koyhanim shahayu rak mesharsi mizbeach la'asoyz karbinosav lo mesharsi Hashem kifi hakavona haritzu, according to the proper kavana. Malm over here is telling us a very fascinating idea that the Kohanim were divided into two groups. The Kohanim that served Hashem 100% L'Shem Shomayim. And then there were Kohanim who were still in training, whose Kavanah was not 100% L'Shem Shomayim. They were working on it. It was a work in progress. In the meantime, it was a man, they received honor, prestige. They were Kohanim. They served in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Kohanim who already achieved Shleimus, who were older, obviously, older, more experienced, and by then it was 100% L'Shem Shemayim, they are the ones who would dress themselves in sackcloth and would daven. The other Kohanim would cry, would engage in Yilala, some type of technique, some type of, I don't know exactly what this is, they would wail. They would wail. It's not the level of davening. There are the daveners and the people who are wailing. So we have over here the second Kohan and the second group. They're called the Mesharsei Elokai. And that's the Alze Omar Helilu Mesharsei Mizbeach. She'ela Shehem Rak Mesharsei Mizbeach. They're not the Mesharsei Hashem. there is the Kohanim who serve Hashem l'shem Shemayim, and then the second group who are in training, they call the Besharis and Mizbeach, they yelilu ki misyoesh, they should wail as if they've given up hope, ki tefilosam in the Ritzuya, because they should not be the ones who are davening, because their tefilos would not be accepted, it's not l'shem Shemayim. Then it goes on to say, bolinu basakim Besharis and Elokoi, Aval Hatzadikim, so he's explaining the pasuk very beautifully, how he explains it, those who serve Hashem, Shemesharis Hashem, Bitzit Kasam, they are the ones who will wear the sackcloth and will pray to Hashem, Haim, Yolilu, Besakim, Lispalel, Velasas, Teshuva, Lahashiv, Esagzera, to pray to Hashem that he should rescind, he should retract from his Gezera, Umefarish, Madua, Yis Oiru, Hakoihanim, Alze Yosem, Mikolaam. Why do the Kohanim daven more than the common man? The answer is because it affects them much more. Ki nimna mibeis elokeichem mincha von nosech. Sha'al yidei harben niskalkalu, because of the locust. V'esliu, it has been destroyed and became wormy. Hachitim v'hushchasu hayenois, the wine spoiled. Sha'imivi mehem minochos v'nesochem, and they have nothing more to offer. Okay, so we take out of this malvum a beautiful yisoid, where he divides the Kohanim into two groups, the senior Kohanim and those who are the rookies who are still in training, and that's how he divides up the pasuk. He first seems to say is that he says it, Chigu v'siftu ha-Kohanim, that refers to the tzaddikim, the higher league, and the pasuk at the end goes back to explain them, but first breaks away by describing the Kohanim who are on the lower level, Heililu Mesharsei Mizbeach, and then it returns back to the Kohanim who are the real Tzadikim, Bohu Linu Vasakim Mesharsei Lokoi. Because why are all the Kohanim together mourning? Because Hashem has rejected their service by denying them korbanos, denying them service. And Beis HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I don't need you, I don't want you. Two different groups of Kohanim. Okay, nothing is simple. Nothing. No, there's no such thing as one size fits all. We know that everyone has a place as their place. Next, can Pastor Gidal in the Malbim, page 221. Kachu tsoim mitzave oid el haKohanim shehem yikachu tsoim v'yikra atzara shis asvu ha'am el beis Hashem. The Malbim learns the word atzara means a gathering. Not like we learned in the Radak, a bitul melacha. V'shehem ya'asu zekenim, and they shall gather the elders, the eskol yoshvei haaretz lebeis Hashem, the kohanim should go out and seek out the elders, and seek out the common man, and ask them to come to the Beis HaMikdash, v'yizaku el Hashem, ki be'eis hatanyos al atzaros, hayu ma'asvim es ha'om, they would gather together the people, Umayridim es hazokim lifnei hateva, and they would ask the zakenim to come before the teva, the Aron HaKodesh, the hazokon doireish lifnehem, divrei kivushin, harsh words. Kimavoar b'mesecht ha-tainis, this is the derech of ha-tainis, you have ha-tainis, the zakenim have to give musr to the people. Pasuk tezvav aha, sheyizaku v'yoyim raho layoyim, they shall cry out layoyim. What does this refer to? Aleph mitzat shekarov hayoyim b'mehera tovoy hagezera. But Malbim also learns that the yolok, the grasshoppers, did not yet arrive. This is a prediction. They should immediately come together because of the gezera. There's no way one can escape from Hashem. Ki ilu bo hashoid al yidei Hashem. Even though it's not natural, he plunders nature. No one can survive before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, pretty straightforward. Let's take a look over here at the Likutei Shas. The Likutei Shas, the Mamori Chazal. The Mamori Chazal, let's start with Pasuk Yud Dalet. Kachu Tzoyim. Hiru atzara itzfu zikeinim. Omar Rebbe Yirmiyah on page 220 on the bottom. Omar Rebbe Yirmiyah, Baal Arab, Samchu Chachamenu, es iser hamilacha b'taynis ala tziras gesham ala kosuf. This is the source that when Chazal are goyzer a taynis tzibur, no one is allowed to go to work. You have to stay home from work. You lose a day's work. Why? What's the source? This very pasuk, Amar Kra, Kachu Tzom, designate a day of fasting. Kiru Atzara, call for, we'll translate the word again in a moment, call for an Atzara. Isfu Zikainim, gather together the elders to give Musar to the people. So the Gemara says, Katzeres. Here the Gemara is telling us the word Atzara, not like we learned so far, two Perushim. One Perush means a gathering together. Everyone shall come together to the Beis HaMikdash. And the second Perush was everyone should be botel from whatever they are doing. Whatever they are doing, stop. Stop doing, hold back from what you are doing and pay attention. Come to this location to follow instructions. This idea is similar to the second we just said, but rather we compare it to a Yom Tov, Atzeres. There are 2 days in the year that are called Atzeres. Shemini Atzeres, and the Yom Tov of Shavuos is also called Atzeres. Hey, Atzeres, by the way, there's nowhere in the Torah, nowhere in the Pasuk does it say that Shemini is Atzeres. This is a term of Chazal. Shavuos is called Atzeres. The Yom Tov of Shavuos, I believe, is called Atzeres, but Shemini, the eighth day of Sukkot, is only called Atzeres in the words of Chazal. But nevertheless, these, what? So Shemini Atzeres or Atzeres, but Shavuos is nowhere called Atzeres. Shavuos is not anywhere in the Torah called Atzeres. However, Chazal referred to the Yom Tov of Shavuos as Atzeres. So the Gemara makes a drasha. Just like Atzeres is a holiday, it's a festival. In fact, the Atzeres of the Torah is the happiest day of the year. V'hoyisa ach sameach. Pure joy. Here it's a tainus. Isn't this an amazing thing? A tainus is a day compared to a day of a Yom Tov, a day of pure joy. How could it be a tainus? A day of tainus be called a Yom Tov, a day of real joy? The answer is, if we all come together to serve Hashem, to take the message of our HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, there can be no greater joy than this. When we get the message, our HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to us, and we pay attention, and we do Musar, we learn Torah, and we daven, and we accept the Musar of Hashem, there can be no greater joy for Klal Yisrael. The pasuk compares a tainus to a Yom Tov. Now, which Yom Tov? The only one where it says Atzeres is Shemini Atzeres, upon which it says Ach Sameach. Incredible that a tainus can be called a Yom Tov. It's not for nothing that Tisha B'Av is called the Moed. Right? Tisha B'Av is the Moed. That's one of the reasons why we do not recite Tachanun on Tisha B'Av. It's a festival. Why is it a festival? So you'll tell me it's because Mashiach is born. No, that's Jewish. The reason why it's a festival is because we are paying attention. We are paying attention to Hashem. Hashem has brought upon us a terrible tragedy, and the world is very different because of this tragedy. But the fact that we come to the Beis HaKnesses and recite Kinois and Daven and fast, there's no greater joy by Hashem than this. We've paid attention. We've got the message. Yeah.
Shemini Atzeres is called Atzeres because Hashem wants us to stop, not leave yet.
But, hold back. Okay. That's one parish.
And similarly,
it's Shulachem Oyom.
It's a gathering because you're not splitting up to go to work.
Correct. So right. It has many meanings there as well. Yeah. But one thing we know for sure. It says in the Torah that on Shemini Atzeres you are not allowed to do milacha. If a person engages in one of the 39 categories of labor, he is chayiv, malchus arboim. So loisa say, it's forbidden. So here we're comparing a tainus to a day of Atzeres, of a Yom Tov. In regard to the halacha, you're not allowed to do milacha. And we derive on a secondary level. But what is the day of Atzeres all about? It's a day of joy. How can you call a tainus when you're wearing sackcloth a day of joy? And I said, the answer is, it is a joy. If you pay attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a tainus can be a greater day of joy than Shemini Atzeres. The Shriat says just run around in circles and you don't even know what you're doing and you don't appreciate what the day is all about. What kind of joy is that? A simcha shel hoilelus. But if you pay attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message, that's the real deal. It's much easier to pay attention to Hashem's message on a tainis than it is on a Yom Tov. On a Yom Tov, we get swept away by all the gashmis, the good food, all of the suda, the family, and all of the meshugasim that come along with the Yom Tov. We forget about what we're really coming to celebrate. We come to the Pesach Seder, and everyone is so busy with who knows what, you forget sometimes to dwell upon what the Yom Tov is all about. And people always tell me, come to the Seder. Come to this, say that, say this. Many times over the years, I've gone with my family, we've gone to Siddurim by other people. You know, sometimes there's no meaning. Because the whole Seder is, you know, the little children, Afikoman prizes, and to go and to find the Afikoman, and everyone has to get dressed up in their nicest clothing and the food. And before you blink, the whole Seder is over. And what have you really taken out of the Seder? Well, it was a beautiful family get-together. It really was. That you can't deny. It was a beautiful get-together, no different than Thanksgiving dinner. Okay, no different. But the day of Pesach is about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And time is very short. By the time you start, before you blink, the whole thing is over. You really don't, if you don't prepare for it well, if there's too many distractions, if there are too many people at your Seder, and you're catching up on, you know, what kind of smartphone do you have, and what's doing by work, how where have you gone in your career, that's it, you lost the whole...
I'm not so sure of that.
Okay, I'm just telling you from my experience.
That is the experience.
Family just sitting around together? It depends. Okay, everything to each his own. Right. You're right, I can't.
Prepare,
okay.
Not
the same. It all depends. One thing is for certain. It's a beautiful family experience to come together. But unfortunately, at least from my experience, also you stick to your own family. I know people, they stick to their own family and they work. I know, I'm thinking about someone very specific. It's he doesn't have any guests. He doesn't have any guests. He just works with his children and he really puts a lot of effort into appreciating what the day is about. And you know, nothing is missed. Well, it's all good. But it's interesting over here, the Pasuk is telling us that a tainis is compared literally to Atzeres. The only festival that is called in the Torah by the word Atzeres is Shmini Atzeres, upon which it says, Ach Sameach. There are no mitzvahs other than pure joy. And that... What? Shri Shal Pesach called Atzeres?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe, fine, okay. So Shri Shal Pesach is also called Atzeres. It's a Yom Tov. A Yom Tov. Why is it called a Yom Tov? Why is a tainis a Yom Tov? The answer is because if you're paying attention to what the day is about, that is a Yom Tov. And in a certain sense, on a tainis, it's much easier to appreciate what the day is about than on a day when you have food and nice clothing and tilim and there's this chatter and this talk about what's going on and all the time is spent on catching up. It's a beautiful family experience. You can't deny that. It really is. And that's what you remember. But did you really walk away from the Yom Tov appreciating what is this day? Maybe yes, maybe not. It's hard. I'm not saying you can't do it and people do not. People do it very well. But I'm saying it's more difficult. There is a degree of difficulty. I once gave a shiur, and I know, I can tell you openly, what destroyed the shiur. What destroyed the shiur was the day that they started putting out food on the table during the shiur. That was the end. The person came, he says, oh, why don't we have some food? And right away, he put out some food, some candies, and some this and that. The distraction, I mean, it's amazing how a little piece of chocolate can be so distracting. It can totally ruin the mindset. People are anyway so delicate. You know, you work a long hard day. You're tired. It's night. You come to learn for a few minutes, just a chap, a svara, you saw it. And it's so delicate. And then on the table is a little piece of chocolate. A little piece of chocolate. And your mind is, should I take it? Should I not take it? I'll eat it. It destroyed the whole shiur. When you have distractions ruin, it causes this collateral damage. When there are no distractions, it's easier. Not that you'll accomplish anything. No guarantee, but it's easier. On a tinus, no distractions. Look at all these programs on Tisha B'Av. Okay, there's like probably 50 of them already. Wherever you blink. Isn't it amazing? None of these programs have any food. There's no food. Can you imagine? That's why many of these programs are very successful. There are no distractions. Rabbi Leaf, he gives that her for hundreds of people. Rabbi Reisman, Ar Yitzchak, Rabbi Fischl Schachter. They have mamish hundreds of people that come there. They sit there for 4 hours, and no distractions, there's no food. And they sit, and they listen, and they talk, and they inspire. It's remarkable. It's really remarkable. There are no distractions. And that's what it says here. Kachu tzayim, designate a day of fasting, hiru, and call for a festival. A festival without food, no distractions. It's a yom tif. And the Gemara's point over here is to say, just like on a Yom Tov there is an Isser Malacha, there's an Isser Malacha, so too, Me'ikar Hadin, on a day of a fast day, there's an Isser Malacha. Mo'at Seres also be'asiyas Malacha, Av Tainis also be'asiyas Malacha, Imayat Seres, Asur Malacha Me'ur To'ah, but at Seres also for Malacha at night. Here's a very important Halacha. Let's even Tisha B'Av. Are you allowed to do Malacha at night? So just like when it comes to a Yom Tov, you're not allowed to melacha once the sunset. It says Hakachavim, Af Tainis, a real Tainis Nami Meurta. Is that correct? Yet that's not what it says in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch it says that at night you're allowed to melacha. On the night of the fast day, you're allowed to melacha. And Tisha B'Av is a little bit different. I have to be warned you about because Tisha B'Av was it goes back to the Miraglim. Vayivku ha'am balayla hahu. The people cried that night. The Meraglim came back on the eighth day of Av, and they delivered their report to the people on the night, the following night, on the ninth day of Av at night, and it was a bechiyah ledoyrei. So Tisha B'Av is a little bit different because it was we commemorate what took place at that night, but the other fast days. If we would observe the other fast days is the way they were meant to be observed, starting Isra Achila at night. So at night, even though we do not eat and we don't drink, and even if you tell Mikra Adin, you can't wear leather shoes and you're not allowed to eat oil and v'chulu, all the different halachas, you would still be permitted to do milacha. You can go to work, you can come home from work very late, there's no prohibition to do milacha. Why not? If we're comparing a tainus to an atzeres, it should be mutter. So the more amr observe the deep farsh lemonade of Yimi Bar Abba or Makro Isfu Zikainim. That's what it says in the next word of the pasuk, gather the elders. When the elders have a program, when they call people together to hear the drasha of the Zikainim, it's only done by day. You don't tell people to come out of their homes at night when it's dangerous, it's dark. When the Zakanim come and give Musa to the people, they give Musa during the day. So that part of the pasuk is teaching us that the Isra Malacha only applies by day, it's not applied by night. Isru Zakanim, Dumida Asiva Zakanim, Ma Asiva Zakanim, Bayom, Aftsaim Nami Bayom. The Amon, Marisa Kasha, Mitihara. Let's say that Isra Malacha should start in the afternoon. Okay, because when in ancient times, when did they call for the Drasha? The drasha was not 9 o'clock in the morning. 9 o'clock in the morning, people are still busy davening, or whether they're finishing up davening. The typical time in ancient times when people came together to hear the drasha of the zakenim was in the afternoon. So let us suggest that the only time of Issa Malacha is the afternoon. In the afternoon. What the Messiah laid Mitzafra Kinufia Miskapsim So what is the answer? Me'atzarayim kisharogil Messiah Leil Rav Huna the Amar Mitzafra Kinufya. I don't know what the answer is. Saraya to Rav Huna the Amar Mitzafra Kinufya. Miskamsim. No, I guess the answer. I think what the Gemara means say that's not so. When the Zakenim called for a drasha, it was not done in the afternoon. It was what the Gemara is saying. You're challenging the Mitzias. You got it wrong. When Zakenim gather when the people are gathered to hear the drasha of the Zakenim, it was done early in the morning when your minds are fresh. Okay, that's the maskana. So we learn over here from this positive chazal, a beautiful halacha, on a day of fasting. Number one, we learn that there's an isser milacha, because we have the word atzara, which comes from atzeres. There are two holidays in the Torah which are called atzeres, Shmini Atzeres and Shvi Shel Pesach. We also, the words of the Rabbanon, Shavuos is also called Atzeres. These are festivals, days when you may not do malacha, and therefore you may not do malacha on a fast day. And don't make a mistake and think that the fast should begin at night, just like according to the halacha, a fast really begins at night. That's why it says the next two words in the pasuk, Isfu Zikenim, the prohibition to do malacha begins at the time when the Zikenim would begin to speak. And when would the Zakenim typically begin to speak? In the morning, by day, not the night before. So we derive over here a shtick of halacha. Okay, let's go now to the next pasuk. Pasuk, moving ahead. Pasuk, tes zayin. Haloi negre neinu oichel nichros. He goes further to say that, look, right in front of our eyes, food has been cut off. Mibes elokeinu. Now you have to repeat the word nichros. The word nichras, to be repeated a second time, it's like it says, nichras mibeis elokeinu, simcha vagil, joy, two different expressions of joy. Repeat the word nichras twice. Negedenu noichel nichras, and then nichras mibeis elokeinu, simcha vagil. This is a style of writing where we repeat words in order to make sense of the pasuk. So let's go further, the few them together. Of shuv firudos. That's a new vocabulary word for us. What does it mean, avshu? Avshu means to decay. Mm-hmm. Okay, it means to decay. Firudos is a really unusual word. It means, and this, everyone here is struggling, we'll learn for the moment, it means containers. Barrels of wine. Now that today, in the modern world today, we can appreciate what this means, because today, Baruch Hashem, is such an affluent society. So if you know anything about wine, it's not just the wine. What's critical about making wine is what type of barrel do you store the wine? It makes a world of a difference. I once had a fellow in our Yitzchak, at Shabbos by the Kiddush, he's really into wine, a young guy is really into wine, and he was explaining to me in great detail the chachma of what kind of barrel does one use to age wine. And they're all different types of woods. Different types of trees, woods, all over the world. Even the same type of wood. It's not the same in America, in France, and Eretz Yisrael. Where do you get the wood that you're going to use to store your wine? The wood will inject into your wine a unique flavor. All different types of wood, age wood, you name it, and it all depends on the age, where it came from, was it ever used before? There's a whole industry of class B. There's not enough expensive wood available in the world for what people would want to use it for. So they have to recycle. After you age one in a barrel, let's say for a year or two, or maybe even more. So what do you do with the barrel? So there's a market to take that barrel and use it again. But it's not the same. It's not the same. It doesn't produce the same quality wine. When you take the barrel, you put very expensive wine, grapes, wine that's come from very expensive grapes, but you can't afford to go and purchase a brand new barrel from some exotic country which is known to produce an incredible fragrant aroma or flavor of the wine. So you got to go use it in Nochamal, recycle it.
You prefer the old
Maybe it's incredible chachma. There's incredible chachma that goes into the barrel. It's not just the grapes. It's not just the wine. It's the barrel where you store the wine, where you allow the wine to age. And then there's another whole industry is where are you storing it? Are you storing your wine in Arizona, where it's a dry climate? Or are you storing your wine in some a tropical climate in Florida somewhere? It's going to be a very different wine. If you let your wine age in Florida, it's going to taste very different than taking the exact same wine and the exact same barrel and aging it in Arizona or Los Angeles, where you have a climate where there's very little humidity. So here we have an allusion to this chachma with the word firudos. Firudos, according to some of the parashah, refers to the barrels. These very exotic, exquisite barrels that was used to age wine, and these barrels, due to the situation, due to the metzias, is going to decay. Not only will you not have wine, you won't have barrels available of quality that will give you an opportunity to, if you did have the wine, to age the wine in a way that would be meaningful. It becomes moldy, the frudos, the barrels, these exotic barrels that you're using for your wine. We'll see more in the first in a few moments. Tachas meg rifoy sehem. Now that's the same, another word for these barrels. So it's another word. If you look at the Metzudos David, he says the same thing over here. Metzudos Sion. It's another barrel, two different types of barrels. There's a barrel called Firudos, and there's a barrel called Meg Rifois, in the plural, of course, Meg Rifois Sehem. So in place, what does it mean, Tachas? Tachas here means, it means, Nashamu, what is it over here in the Metzudos? Nashamu, go back to the previous page. Tachas, he goes, Kleayayin Nisapshu, Tachas, let's see what it says right away in the Metzudos David, Yud Zayin, page 220. Kleayayin, the utensils of wine, nisapshu, will become moldy, tachas migufo sehen. Ki michesaroin hayayin, due to the fact that they're not being used, loy nishtamshu buchem, they're not going to be used, loy pochasu hamugufois, they're not going to be opened, lehachnis ha'avir, to allow air inside, ulchein nisapshu, the barrels are going to decay. They're going to dry out. So the word frudos is called Tirgim Yonasan, the Garavei de Chamra, the barrels of wine.
It's a very questionable question because in his time there were no barrels. They put everything in pottery, in big jugs.
So it seems to be saying they were barrels. They were chavios.
We're saying barrels because that's what we're translating it as. But they didn't have barrels.
It seems they did. It seems there is something to us.
They had wood.
Not in Ashishrol. In the whole Middle East, they used it in pottery. They found, last week, they found
what do you mean?
A big pot with
wine. What do you mean? They're always talking about barrels in the Mishnah.
Yeah, but that's the Mishnah. That's a long time
later. Columbus doesn't mean it's a barrel.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see. Deutsch.
Huh?
Yeah, Deutsch. I'm sure he wants.
They use the big jars, gigantic.
Okay, all right, okay, fine. Okay, I don't know. I really don't know. Let's go further. So one more time. Of shu frudos, the barrels are going to decay underneath their covers. The meg rifoy sehem, we're translating here for right now, the seal. The barrel has a seal on top, and being that these barrels are not being used, it's just air. The absence of yayin in these barrels causes the barrels themselves to
dry out
and become moldy. So avshu frudos, the barrels become moldy. Tachas underneath meg rifoy sehem, underneath their lids, because there's nothing inside. It's empty. It's just air, and this air is poisonous to the makeup of the barrel, and it causes the barrel to become moldy. It can no longer be used. Noshamu oitzar, it's another curse. The storehouses of food will become shomeim. Shana means will become desolate. Neherisu mam guros, a mageira is a storehouse of grain. So the storehouse of grain will become demolished. The heresy will become demolished. Because there is no Dagon to store these things. So over here, with this, the common theme of all of this pasuk is not only are the items going to disappear from Eretz Yisrael, the containers, the storage facilities and the containers are going to disappear. They're going to get, they're no longer going to become usable. If you don't use the storehouse, the silos and the storehouses and the barrels to store these items, then the storehouses also are become damaged and are no longer usable when the day comes and the Hashem gives you once again grain, wine, oil. Where are you going to put it? You're going to have to go invest in infrastructure to rebuild the storage houses in order to store these things. If something is, it's an incredible idea, is you can't take anything for granted. Even the containers that you use and the storehouses, if they're not actually being used, automatically they begin to decay and get ruined. Okay,
years ago, they found a problem with the tank cars. They shipped the wine in. They shipped the kosher wine to one destination. And on the way back, they used the tank cars for non-kosher wine.
That made a treif.
So they, I think they...
They had a problem. Always hashkacha. All right, Barrel Wine always used to say, Ashkacha is, kashrus industry is a land mine that every rabbi will get sooner or later blown up in. That's what he said. All right, Barrel Wine. Kashrus industry, it's a landmine. Sooner or later, you walk around and the boom.
Nobody gets out.
No one comes out shalom when you go into the kashrus industry. It's a dangerous game, the kashrus industry. Let's see here what it says in these two psukim. A few survivors. A few survivors. Pasuk Tezayin. It really is. My father was a rav. My father had nothing to do with kashrus, and yet my father was also. He had every time there was something in kashrus, it did not work out good. There was always trouble, in every way.
My father warned me.
Stay away.
One day he said he quit when he saw what the guy was up to, and he didn't want to get involved anymore because he knew somewhere along the line
it's impossible.
Rabbi
Reisman told, I think Rabbi Reisman says of the Rav Palm, warned him not to get involved in kashrus.
Someone has to get
involved. He warned him not to get involved, and he didn't listen. Rav Palm told Rabbi Reisman, don't get involved in kashrus. If I remember correctly, and Rabbi Reisman did not listen.
No.
He got involved in kehila kashrus.
Right.
And kehila kashrus, okay, it's a very high standard. But, you know, it was a rough beginning. It was definitely a rough beginning.
The truth is, it wasn't that some of the things went on more of his fault. It was somebody else in the...
Okay, it's always like that.
...who knew nothing.
Never his fault.
Yeah, literally.
Nothing.
Yeah, because we were at meetings, and what's his name, Rabbi Cohen, looked at the guy when he said what he said. He told him to shut up, because he made everybody else look bad.
All right, whatever. I don't know. Kehila started out not as a kashrus organization. Kehila started out, I remember the old days, I used to see the reports because they'd give them first to my father. And I used to look at the reports. And what they started out was they would just go into every store and they would just ask questions.
That was the KIC.
They would give,
that was KIC. No, that was KIC.
And KIC evolved.
Excuse me.
Kehila came out of that.
Right, Kehila evolved.
Kehila began exactly when Ali Processing had a problem with the Rebbe and they needed to get meat and they started with this to get it going. And Chapanash got on board and that's where it grew from Chapanash. That's where.
Okay, whatever. This is a whole ugly business. All right, let's see over here the Mefarshim. Let's see the two psukim. Let's see these two psukim together in the Mefarshim. On page 220. Okay, let's review the Metzudos David. Metzudos David on page 220 says, what does it mean over here? That neged einenu oichel nichras. Pasuk tes zayin. Haloi negeinenu roi manusha arbem mechala kol. Okay, we witness enenu. Our eyes are going to view the korban. We're going to see how the locust is going to eat up the land. Nibes alokeinu milas nichras musav lamal lamata. The word nichras is to be repeated twice. Therefore, loimar nichras v'nifsak nibes, and then after we say the first time that we witness in front of our eyes, the food has been cut off. And then we say again, Nichras, it's been cut off. Mibes Elokeinu, Simcha v'Gil. The Simcha and Gil has been cut off. Loima Nichras, V'nifsek, Mibes Hashem, Simcha v'Gil. V'al Simcha Sashir Yoimar. What are we referring to? The Simcha of song. Ki hoyol v'nyayin l'naseich alma yoimu ha'levi'im b'shir. Ah, so you see over here, Mr. Rappaport, here's the answer to your question. Here we go. We got it. We got it. Go back and tell your wife, we found the answer. The Simcha V'Gil is referring specifically to the role of the Levim, because the Levim, it is their role to sing Shira. When do they sing Shira? At the moment when you pour the Nesachim. And if there's no Nesachim to pour, then there's nothing to sing. There is no Shira. The Shira depends upon the Nesachim. So therefore, it's been cut off from the Beis HaMikdash, the role of the Levim, in giving, singing songs to Hashem.
That's why we say the Shira Levim.
The Shir Lo Yishtu Yayin.
It says that you're not allowed.
Yeah.
That's because part of the Zeche L'Churban. Zeche L'Churban is...
The Levium had no control over, the Kahanim. If they didn't do their job, the Levium were inconsequential. So it's based on the Kohanim. But the Levium are called Yirei Hashem, because the Vilna Gaon makes a point of saying, how do you know what's when it says Yivorech has based Israel, Yivorech has based Aaron, Yivorech Yirei Hashem. Where's the Levium? They're talking about Yirei Hashem. How do we know? Because it says I counted them at Golan. Everybody else was counted from 20 years and up, except the Levium from 30 days and up. So that's what it means. I counted them at Golan. So Yirei Hashem is the Levium.
Their focus, beautiful. Their focus, the reality. Very good, very good, very good. Okay, so here we have the Simcha V'Gil. You're saying very good over here. The Zman HaZev is Osir to drink wine together with live music. There's a prohibition that remains in effect. The Zecher L'Churban. You're not allowed to drink wine with musical or musical entertainment outside of a Sudas Mitzvah. So if you go to a concert, you're not allowed to, a Jewish concert, you're not allowed to serve wine. It's forbidden. Okay, they have every so often, they have fundraising events. They're very good. A fundraising event is not a Sudas Mitzvah. Not that I know of. Not that I know. Maybe not. I know it's not so simple. I think Rav Hudner held, I don't know to what degree he said this, but Rav Hudner did hold that a yeshiva dinner, has the status of a Sudas Mitzvah. So remember, they always say this is a Chaim Blum dinner. Not that I've ever gone to Chaim Blum dinner, but I've been told.
Well, they always have it during Sphira. Dinners are either during, they have them during Sphira.
Well, because then there are no weddings. So there's no excuse. There's no excuse
right,
not
so
to attend.
Yeshiva dinners are in Sphira.
And does that mean you're allowed to serve wine? Does that mean that the yeshiva dinner today, yeshiva dinners have become very, very strange. Today they have entertained by yeshiva dinners. They have music, some of them. It's a whole new world today.
Do you know years ago they had it also?
Mixed dancing.
No.
Yeah.
They would have Broadway,
mixed dancing. Yeah.
Broadway comedians or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
At the dinners.
Oh.
And they had in the olden days, they had mixed dancing at the dinners. Really? RJJ. I believe my mother told me that RJJ. I remember my mother, she was so smart. My mother grew up, my grandfather was a Rashivan RJJ. And then we were kids. We lived in Flapashir, so I went to Chaim Berlin. I never went to a Chaim Berlin dinner. And my father went once to a Chaim Berlin dinner. And then they were really pressing my parents to come to the dinner, this and that. And then I don't know how my parents, they found out what the dinner was about. And they also, the yeshiva, they demanded that the Koilel Yungalite also have to come to the dinner. Part of being in the Koilel, you have no choice. You have to come to the dinner. Even though, forget a free ticket. But you have to come there in order to. So I remember my mother commenting and saying, it's like, wow, things have changed. Mikotze elakotze. In her, when she was a child, and my grandfather was a Rashivan RJJ, our Rosh Hashiva would not be caught dead at the RJJ dinner. Let me explain. And why? Because in those days, who had the money? The non-religious.
Right.
And the president, Irving Bunim, he would work. Who would he raise money? Who had the money to support Torah? His business associates who were not Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. So they made a big dinner, whatever a big dinner was called in those days, to raise a lot of money. And in order to keep these people happy, you serve them a good meal with water, with some good liquor, and you have entertainment. Broadway, you're selling out Broadway comedians, and a little mixed dancing doesn't hurt either.
Right?
Right? It doesn't. So would a Rosh Hashiva, someone in they just started a kollel then, would they be caught dead at the yeshiva dinner where there's a comedian saying dirty jokes and there's mixed dancing? Not in a million years.
Right.
It's like the fundraising, Rahmana Litzlan, this is what was necessary in those days in order there should be chinuch habanim. So Baruch Hashem, achshrei dora, the generation has become a very Baruch Hashem, chasdei Hashem, and we're able to support our institutions from within. We do not need to schnorr from the people who are, we still do, don't get me wrong,
yeah.
People who are totally irreligious, but the one who controls the scene is the B'nai Torah. And therefore the dinners take on a whole new Yiddish tam. And over time, more and more and more, the flavor of Yiddishkeit by the dinners is more and more enhanced. I, for example...
It used to be before the mirror dinner.
Yeah.
Just before the smorgasbord, people came and would give a shir.
Your shir. You would actually give a shir.
Yeah.
And now they'll have a siyum by the dinner. And then Tar V'das is so nice all the years. I used to go to those dinners. They would give out a Torah journal. That the Talmidim, you know, they sweat away to produce a Dover Choshev. You know, Dover Emel, Shulchan Malachim, put out a Choshev. So it's a very, it became a whole new world today. Okay, so over here, the Simcha V'Gil has come to an end. It's also very interesting, this pasuk tells us that this pasuk is a very tragic pasuk. It reveals that not only will there be tragedy, you're going to see the tragedy. Einoi Doime, a situation of where a person is forced to see his prized possessions destroyed in front of his eyes, to a person that didn't have to witness this horror. It's a much greater curse to have to witness the loss of your person. This is some type of loss. I didn't have to see it. Baruch Hashem, I heard about it. I suffered financially from it. But at least I was spared from witnessing the destruction of my prized possessions. It's painful. It leaves a mark. Here it's very tragic how it says, Haloi neged einenu oichel nichas. That's a very severe curse. To see the locusts ascend upon the land and destroy your hard labor. You sweat, you go out to the field, you plow, you seed, you work, you survey the land, you spend days, hours, months working on the field. And then these creatures come and you're helpless and you have to watch your hard labor be destroyed. That's a very severe curse. Halay neged einenu oichel nichras.
We have it in the pasuk by Paro, Re'u ki ra'a neged
v'nechem. Re'u. See, you're going to see yourself. It's cursing them. And then nichras mibeis elokeinu simcha v'gil. And that same word is being repeated. The Simcha V'Gil is being taken away from us. Maybe there's a message over here. The fact that the word Nichras has to be connected, has to be repeated twice. The Simcha V'Gil is going back on Neged Einenu. There's no greater denial of Simcha V'Gil like when a person witnesses with his own eyes Chorban. Okay, the people, you know, people that happened to the Holocaust, there are two categories of survivors. There are survivors who went to the Holocaust, who have numbers on their arms, who slept in the barracks in Auschwitz, and then there are survivors who somehow by a miracle they were able to escape the very last minute. when everyone was being rounded up and things were getting really, really bad, someone's going to, you know, run away here, get on this train, go there, and they ran away. And they never had to see the inside of Auschwitz. They never had to see the inside of the cattle cart where people were taken away. So, and they lost everything. They lost everything. They cut two people meet in America. One of them went to the camps, and one of them survived the last minute. Both of them have nothing. They didn't have a penny to their name. They lost their entire family, each one of them. But Ein Edoimeh, the person who didn't see it, to the person who saw it. The person who saw it, I mean, you can't generalize. It's not true in every situation, but generally, the person who saw it is traumatized. It's nightmares his whole life. And the person who never saw it, okay, so you see, the guilt is just, you know, some people, the guilt, it fills them up to such a degree, that's a different issue. They don't have, because they didn't experience it, and they know everyone else experienced it, but they didn't see it. They didn't see it. It's a different category of a survivor. So really, the people, he's a Holocaust survivor. I always to myself ask the question, what does that mean, you're a Holocaust survivor? You can't, there's no two Holocaust survivors that are the same. No such thing. Everyone has their own story. Everyone is a survivor. Is a survivor, you know. Hands down. I don't know who come near the people who can live on and being a survivor. But no two survivors are the same. You can't go compare a person who went through 6 years in Auschwitz. It wasn't for 6 years. But you can't compare a person who went through 6 years of torture. You can't compare a person who went through torture for 6 years to a person who just got lucky. I mean, I got lucky with Pashkocha. He got on a train the very last moment and escaped. They're both survivors. In the diamond. Here it says something very, very frightening. Haloi neged einenu oichel nichras. We saw it. Our own eyes. And it's not a coincidence that very same word. Then there's another statement. That nichras, yibes elokeinu simcha vagil. There's no such thing as joy and happiness in this world anymore. It's interesting, the same nichras is connecting the two together. Almost as if to say, the only time that for sure, or naturally, or more often than not, where it's mamish nichras, simcha v'gil, are to the people who witness the horror. If you're in that category, where it's neged einenu, you witness the horror, then in a chinami, it's the simcha of a gil for the person's rest of his life is not going to be. It's not going to be there. But if a person was blessed, did not have to. It was not neged einenu. Then listen, it's the tsar. No one's denying the tsar, but to say that it's nichras simcha and gil, not necessarily to the same degree. At least it's not a coincidence that this nichras is a one word. Smack in the middle, connecting these two things together to tell you the effect of witnessing horror, what it has upon the person that would haunt him for the rest of his life.
Okay. You mentioned RJJ, Shabbos is the yard sale.
This Shabbos, Zuchuso Yogin Elayn, Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, came to America. One day, I remember listening to Rabbi Rakefet. Wow, does he go to his, anyone wants to know about Rabbi Yaakov Yosef? Yaakov Yosef, he goes every detail with incredible insight, analysis. What? Everything, a lot of things killed him. Everything killed him. He wasn't. He Rabbi Rakefet, he said it all. Rabbi Rakefet, he must have 20, 30 hours on him at least. And one thing that just sticks out in my mind, what he said, which fataiches what the problem was, what killed him, was he came to America in his first Russia. He spoke to an American audience. So he needed to blow his nose. So how did he blow his nose? He had a scarf. Yeah, he had a scarf. In Europe, they don't have handkerchiefs. And the Europeans, the way they would blow their nose, they had these special long European scarves. And those were used, to blow your nose. In America, they never saw such a thing like
that.
You don't blow your nose, it's like using your sleeve. We look at it, in America, if a public speaker would get up, in front of everyone and go and wipe his nose on his jacket, you would say this person needs to be sent back to kindergarten to be trained. Not to do that. So he had this scarf, this very big scarf, and that was the style. That's the way things were done in Europe. But the Americans never saw this. They didn't relate to this. And when he did that, they gasped. And it right away created this barrier, like, he's not one of us. He's from a different there
culture.
Was different culture, exactly,
excuse.
Different culture.
It was an excuse.
A lot of things. He builds our Kefet, he very much builds upon that incident to bring out problems, cultural differences between the Europeans and the Americans, and it wasn't such an easy road.
Spit boxes, right.
Today it's unacceptable, it's disgusting. Who would tolerate such a thing today?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Who would tolerate such a thing? In any event, he was a very big tzaddik, very holy person. Zuchusoy Yogain Olein. He accomplished great things in America. He really set the tone. Zuchusoy Yogain Olein. Mary, he took me to the cemetery not that long ago. It's a beautiful, beautiful cemetery. So impressed. What's the name of the cemetery called?
Union Field.
It's gorgeous.
That's the one of the,
it's right in Tabarro. Very old, but very has a lot of character. They don't make cemeteries like this anymore. I'll tell you that. Some places. But like the way it just has a character that you do not see in any modern cemetery. You do not see this. This is something very. It's
beautiful.
What?
Jewish congressmen buried
there.
Congressmen
are buried there?
And of course, Bert Law.
Who?
Bert Law
was a comedian.
Was a comedian?
Comedian.
Well, they'd also need entertainment, you know?
My favorite tombstone. While alive, he lived. That's all it said.
While alive, he lived. My favorite.
I wondered what kind of life this guy had.
My favorite tombstone is a very big
while
programmer, and it says just one word: offline. Offline. Okay. It's okay. Let's go further. So going further over here in Pasuk Yitzayin in the Mitzvot Stavit, it says in Pasuk Yitzayin of Shulut, we'll finish up the Mitzvot and Rashi, and then we'll stop. Of Shulut Ferudos, what time is it over here? Oh, it's very, very, it's very late. It's the first Mitzvot. Of Shulut Ferudos. What are the Ferudos? Very strange word. Klei Hayayin. The Klei Hayayin, the utensil, like Parut, each one is separate, is distinct. Each barrel is distinct. Parut is separate. Klei hayayin and nisapshu have become moldy. Tachas beneath migufoy sehem, their covers, their lids. Ki mecheschesren hayayin, because wine is not being added into these containers. Nishtamshu bochem, v'loy nishtamshu bochem, v'loy pochasu ha-migufoy, no one opened up the lids. L'chach nisva avi u'lechem, therefore nisapshu, they have become moldy. Ki lishmish of the mitzudos. On the next page, Noshamu Oitzarois, Hamukhaimos, Shaitrim Sham Hatvua Nasu Shaimimin, the place where they store grain has become desolate. And then the next passage says the same thing, poetic repetition, Nehersu, it has been demolished, Mam Gurois. What's Mam Gurois? Mixos Min Hamigeros, some of the storage houses, Nehersu, has become demolished, Ki Nisyabesh Hadogon, Venifsak, and no longer exists. If no one's going there, if no one's going to use the Mageros, look at the Mitzvot Tzion on the left side. Kein Yukaru Oitzarois Hatavua. The Chain Ha'oid Hazerab Magura. Is there any seed in the Magura in the storage house? So they have two words here which mean the same thing, the Mageros and the Oitzarois, Noshamu and Nehersu, poetic repetition. These facilities have become desolate. And when there's no one taking care of them, no one is tending them, checking there are no leaks, and there's no mold, and there's no termites, destroying them, what's going to happen naturally? They will collapse. They will collapse on their own. If there's no one maintaining them, that's what happens naturally. So we have a little curse. Not only is the product no longer going to be available, the storage houses that are used to contain these products also are going to be destroyed. Okay, we're going to stop here tomorrow. We'll pick up with the Rashi and the Parshim. Yitz Hashem.